Stella Vada listened to the lawyer's recitation of ISC's delaying tactics with mounting anger.
I thought it was illegal now to register patents in obscure jurisdictions.
It's supposed to be, certainly, though it was common practice before the commercial code was approved. And Nexus is a signatory to the code, so it should apply to ISC for all patents issued within the past 170-odd years. I've searched all the relevant databases. No patents relating to shipboard Ansibles are in any of the five systems where patents are supposed to be registered. But ISC's legal department claims that some of the technology could have been patented before adoption of the code, or could have been registered remotely, as their research labs are widely scattered. But they won't tell me where, for reasons of security, they say.
I'll bet they don't even have patents.
I find that hard to credit.
If they had patents, they'd be eagerly telling us what they were. I don't think they've lost them. I think they've never had them. Rafe said they were practically paranoid about secrecy and were convinced that the technology involved would endanger their monopoly. They'd know about patent searches. They'd be worried someone could figure out how to pirate the tech, produce it remotely somewhere.
Then if you're convinced of that, let's go on and apply for patents here. From the little you've told me, this is revolutionary stuff.
It will blow the top off communications. And it's time you knew all about it. Here, look at this on my machine, right here.
Stella took a data cube out of the pocket of her suit. She handed it to him, then sat back and watched as he read from the screen.
Oh, my! Trees and leaves and roots and branches. This really works?
The pirates have the old form. The stuff that someone stole from ISC's research lab. Don't know who or when or how. We've improved it considerably, as you see.
It makes system Ansibles obsolete, or almost.
Not really. All regular communications nets tie into them. Planetary and stations communications, for instance. What this does is give ships the ability to go ship to ship even when a system Ansible doesn't exist, and ship to Ansible at distances where light-speed communication to and from a system Ansible is slow and difficult. System Ansibles will still carry most traffic.
But if they can be mounted on ships, they can be mounted anywhere. On stations, even in offices and homes.
True, but I still think the existing communications networks will keep system Ansibles in business.
You need to apply for patents right away. Today, is this the only complete data set?
No, but it's the only one that's out of secure storage.
I assume you'd rather I didn't take it with me.
Correct.
Then I'll contact my office, download the appropriate forms, and may I see one of these in operation?
Yes, of course. We do, in fact, have one here.
Stella took back the data cube and led him into the back office, which now connected to the research lab where Toby worked. She had finally gotten all the parts out of their apartment living room. Toby looked up from his workbench. Rascal, at his feet, looked up, then lay his nose back on Toby's foot.
Toby, we need a demonstration. What's the time in Aunt Grace's office?
I'll look it up.
Conventionally, I'd use a regular long-distance service, call the system Ansible, and set up a call to Slaughter Keys Ansible. That Ansible would route my call through local call centers to the code number I specified. There would be a delay at both ends, attenuated by something ISC refers to as a system booster to near-natural conversational pauses. From the effect, we're guessing these are smaller, less powerful Ansibles placed in orbiting satellites, but we don't actually know.
9 a.m. We're back in sync for the next few days.
Slaughter Key's rotation isn't the same as the standard day length here, but we're lucky because I can call Aunt Grace right now. In fact, we'll place two calls. One by conventional, and one using our own Ansible, and you can observe the difference. Toby, you start the connection on my mark. I'll be calling on the ordinary one.
Stella picked up the desk phone.
Now.
She entered the origination codes for an Ansible call to Slaughter Key. She handed the headset to the attorney so he could hear for himself the familiar clicks and buzzes that went with an Ansible call. The status lights went from red to green, and there was a brief display of Slaughter Key's logo.
She says, "What do you want?" She's busy.
I'll take that. I'm Stella Vada calling for Grace Vada. I know she's on another line, but ask her to confirm that the other line is an Ansible call from Vada Transport Headquarters.
Stella heard a voice on the attorney's headset. The attorney listened in.
Yes, she is on such a call. What's going on?
Just a test of our equipment. Tell her Stella sends her love and things are looking up.
Stella walked across the room and gestured Toby aside. He was pink to the ears. Aunt Grace, who had turned on her video pickup, glared out of the screen.
Stella, what are you playing at? Why two calls on two lines from your office?
Good news, but I can't give you details yet.
Young lady.
There are a few legal threads to tie down, and that's all I can say.
Oh, you were born a tease. So how's the business?
Growing. No more ships lost, and the ones we have are moving at 97% capacity. And how are things on Slaughter Key?
Calm, except of course where I've been stirring the pot. Your mother and Joe's children are fine, growing like weeds and showing every sign of being vatas to the core. Anything else? I do have a full day, and I'm already running behind.
No, that's it. Thanks, Aunt Grace.
Stella cut the connection and looked at her attorney.
Most impressive. I'll certainly be able to attest to the efficacy of the device. So, if you'll let me have a terminal, I'll get busy. We should be able to file for patents today, as organized as your data are.
Good.
Stella led him back to the main office, installed him at a terminal in her office, and left him to it. A few hours later, he called her in and presented a sheaf of hard copy for her to sign.
And what name did you want those patents in? Vada Transport?
No. Toby did the work. He should get the credit.
He didn't do all the work. You said he started with the pirated design. I'd recommend Vada Transport for the rest, with Toby, if you insist. He's still a minor in law, and you, as his guardian, could be named instead, listed only for those things he actually designed himself.
Stella agreed. Even if he held only those patents, he would be secure for life, assuming the pirates didn't blow them all away. By the close of business, the patent applications were filed. Patents relating to the design of a working prototype of a small Ansible-based communications device mountable on a ship and interfacing with existing system Ansible-based communications networks. The Moscow Confederation, as one of the five systems in which patents were registered for recognition under the Uniform Commercial Code, had a reputation for speedy processing, but Stella was surprised at how fast that could be. Shortly before mid-first shift the next day, her assistant told her she had an incoming call from Planetside. The man on the screen wore a patents office shield clipped to his lapel.
Stella Vada?
Yes?
We have examined your remarkable patent application. I see you took the advice of Brinkles, Patrick, and Stansted as intellectual property attorneys.
Yes. Is anything wrong?
Oh, not at all. Not at all. They have an excellent reputation. I'm sure that if they say a search for prior patents was made, they did in fact make it. And I see that your attorney attests that he personally observed the device in operation and is satisfied that it does in fact work as claimed. I did have a few questions for you. Were you planning to manufacture the device in this jurisdiction?
Yes.
And were you planning to manufacture and sell the device without ISC knowledge?
Without their knowledge? Not at all. We asked them when we couldn't find any record of patents they might have held, so they know what we're doing.
I see. And were you planning to manufacture and sell the device under the name of Vada Transport?
No. I planned to designate a separate entity for that.
Very well. I am pleased to tell you that we were all impressed by the device and its likely scope for manufacture and sale. We would expect a reaction from ISC, of course, but the device could benefit many, which is another reason to approve the application. I will forward the relevant numbers and papers at once and proceed with registration. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Stella could hardly catch her breath. It had worked. It had worked, and so fast. It wasn't, she reminded herself, anything but a start. But it was a strong start. She found Toby glowering at a monitor.
Aunt Stella, I only made 87 on my history exam, and I think I was right.
On what?
First expansion was from old Earth to its system satellites, right?
As far as I know.
And second expansion was from old solar to central sector only?
I don't know, Toby, I don't remember. And anyway, we have something to celebrate.
If I don't get a higher grade in history, Zori Luari will beat me out for class honors.
Stella paused. Toby had been topping his class easily until now, and he'd shown no interest in class honors. She'd urged him to find friends, go places with other kids, which he sometimes did. But mostly, he stayed in the lab working.
Who's Zori Luari?
She's just a girl.
Even geniuses had hormones, and he was still a teenager. Stella shook her head. Being Toby's guardian might turn out to be more of a challenge than she'd thought.
Why don't we go out to lunch, and you can tell me more about her.
There's not much to tell. She was top of the class before I got here. Everybody likes her except the Dormops.
Dormops?
You know, kids that don't like anybody but each other.
Stella led the way out of the offices, tapping her wrist to indicate lunchtime to the receptionist.
What's she look like?
She's kind of... Well, she's a girl, you know. She has soft hair and things.
He was sunk. He was completely sunk. Stella remembered all too well her own first crush. It had been the boy's jawline, just that angular, bony shape which made her knees weak. And Toby was old enough for it to be more than a simple crush. Phrase by broken phrase, on the way to the restaurant where she'd made reservations, Toby told her more than enough to make Stella both sympathetic and amused. Zori was smart. She had a laugh that made everybody laugh. The soft hair was thick and black and shiny. She had eyes as black as her hair. She played on the Wally team. Wally, Toby explained when Stella asked, was a ball game where you bounced two balls off the walls of a small room and scored by a complicated system that made no sense to Stella, even after explanation.
And her family's been here since forever, and they don't like newcomers that much, but Zori's nice to them anyway.
Stella looked up at the woman in the black smock.
I'll have the mock duck a l'orange. Toby?
Oh, anything. Oh, can I have that lamb thing, Aunt Stella?
Of course, dear. I said this was a celebration.
What are we celebrating?
I'll tell you later. A rack of lamb, and we'll want dessert later.
When the waitress had gone, Stella leaned closer to Toby.
We have the patents.
All of them? Already?
Yes. And the ones you invented are in your name. The rest are in Vada Enterprises.
Is this gonna make us rich?
Toby, we are rich, compared with most people anyway. But yes, it will make us a lot richer, if I don't do something stupid.
You won't do anything stupid, Aunt Stella. You're much smarter than you think.
Stella's mind raced ahead to all the things she had to do to get the Ansibles into production through sales before the profits she hoped would roll in.
I'm glad you think so, Toby.
Rafe glanced at the windows of his office. A lowering gray sky, the warm, almost brownish tone that meant more snow was on the way. Winter in Nexus City. Not a favorite time of year at all. But he had vanquished Parmina and many of his stooges. He had the board's acquiescence, if not their approval, for the licensing negotiations with Vata Enterprises.
Emil?
Yes, sir.
Check with enforcement and make sure they've sent that message rescinding threats to whatever that place is where Space Defense Force is.
Yes, sir.
And get their chief up here. We need to have a serious talk.
Rafe looked at the sealed message from Termanian and turned it over and over. He could anticipate what it said, and reading it would only reinforce his own bias about the man. He didn't need biases. He needed clear thinking. He wondered if the man had said anything, done anything, that had value he should recognize. He looked at the window again and saw the first flakes drifting past.
Sir? They said they sent the message, but they couldn't stop the ships.
Ships? What ships?
They said it's standard procedure. They sent ships to see if they could catch the wrongdoers. Didn't you know that?
No, I did not know that. No one mentioned it. What ships? How many?
I don't know. Should I ask?
Rafe looked at him. Amol paled and disappeared from the doorway. To ask, Rafe hoped. Not that he'd wait. He made his own call to enforcement.
This is the CEO. Let me speak to your chief now.
He's on his way up to your office, sir.
Then let me speak to whoever's left in charge.
That would be Assistant Director Maliki, but he's busy.
Now.
Yes, sir. Just a moment.
Yes, sir, Chairman?
I understand your division dispatched ships to System Ansible Boxtop Zip Figaro 112. yet I gave the order to stop any further action against those people hours ago.
Well, yes, you did, but the ships were already en route.
In FTL flight? That was fast.
Well, no, they weren't in FTL yet, but they were far enough out we didn't think a message would reach them until they jumped.
So you didn't even try?
Well, it would have been a waste of time, wouldn't it? If they weren't going to get the message before jump anyway. And we're always being told to save expenses.
Rafe clenched his teeth. The words that wanted to come out would not help the situation.
How many ships?
We had information from our agents in Adelaide that this so-called Space Defense Force had 3 warships of patrol and cruiser size, and 3 fast courier ships. So we basically threw the whole sector force at them. We don't want to lose any of our...
How many?
14, sir. That should take care of them and not cost us anything.
The point is, Maliki, that we don't want to take care of them. That's why I had you send that message rescinding the warning.
That's not what it said.
What's not what it said?
Well, you just said to tell them to disregard the previous messages. You said not to institute action against them. That's not the same as rescinding the warning or telling us to quit what we were already doing. They're still illegals, aren't they? They still meddled with our equipment, didn't they? And they can't be allowed to get away with it. I figured you'd have sent the force along later, but sooner's better if you want to catch them with their pants down.
Rafe knew that if Maliki had stood in front of him, he'd have been hard put to keep from strangling the idiot.
Maliki, you will shortly realize that your reasoning is completely and utterly wrong. Tell me now exactly where those ships are, where they were, and what their ETA to that system is. And I'll need their beacon IDs.
I don't see what you're so upset about. They're the standard sector force. They left Sector HQ when we first notified them, boosted hard to the jump point, and exited 79 minutes ago, local time. They're in jump space now. They'll arrive in 2.3 standard days.
Sir, Chief of Enforcement Danny Cuffin is here, sir.
Ping my assistant with the beacon IDs, Maliki, now.
Rafe switched off, his mind racing. Even old outmoded ships with less trained crews, at 14-3... and Kai's without a full load of munitions. He had to do something. And killing the Chief of Enforcement wouldn't be the right something. Rafe settled himself squarely behind the vast desk.
Show him in.
Enforcement's director was a head taller than Rafe, his head shaved bald, his implants bulging on both sides. The access flaps had complex tattoos on them.
Well, I'm glad you finally have time to see me. You've been upsetting my people nosing around, and you didn't even see me in person first.
Rafe looked at him. The man glowered back. He probably thought he looked tough, Rafe thought. But Gary or any of his commandos could have taken him down in seconds. Telltale softness below the ears, the jaw, where muscles had gone to flab.
You have made a mistake.
Cuffin leaned forward to put his hands on the desk.
No, it's you that made mistakes, Sonny. You think that just because your father ran this company and wanted you to sub for him for a while, that you're the man he is? Well, let me tell you something.
Cuffin's face paled abruptly. Rafe smiled at him, the nose of the weapon he much preferred to a needler, noisy as it was, pointing steadily at the man's face.
You need to sit down and be quiet.
Rafe's hand didn't move. He really did like the feel. It was one of the things that had impressed him about Kai. She, too, carried a Rossi Smith with Blood Beast Tusk grip. He needed not to think about her right now. He needed to think about this person whose face now gleamed with sweat.
No, you wouldn't.
Waste a round on you? That depends. Sit down. Now.
The man sat as if that word had cut his hamstrings. Rafe rested his elbows on the desk and brought his other hand up to brace the first.
You must realize, Denny, that I've killed quite a few men, using the term loosely, and it doesn't bother me. So in your position, you might wish to be careful to answer what I ask without any unnecessary delay or insults.
Emil poked his head in the door.
Sir, there's some data up from...
His eyes widened. Rafe didn't take his gaze from Denny Cuffin.
Later, Emil. And close the door.
Ray felt a chuckle trying to emerge and stifled it. This was more fun than he'd expected, but he couldn't afford fun. Not with 14 ships aimed at Kai.
You're crazy.
Now, you see, that's the sort of thing you shouldn't say to someone who's holding a gun on you.
Rafe took his left hand away from the other, shook his arm a little, and the hilt of his knife slid into his hand. He flicked it around.
Or a knife. You see, Denny, the first mistake you made was thinking I was some witless playboy pretending to be my father. I'm not a playboy, and I'm not like my father at all, in some ways.
He flipped the knife up, caught it, all without moving his other hand. Cuthin's mouth worked. His eyes had moved to the knife, but were now fixed on the gun muzzle as if he could see through the barrel into Rafe's intent. Rafe hoped he could.
The second mistake you made was thinking that you could keep fooling the company forever, pocketing the money that should have gone to our fleet.
I didn't! They kept cutting our budget! It's not my fault!
Even a divisional director's salary doesn't cover your expenditures. Or did you think no one would ever think to look at your financials?
You spied on me? On a division director?
Indignation overcame fear for a moment, a flush of color, but then he paled again.
It was my assigned job to learn all I could about the corporation so I could make the best decisions. So yes, I followed the money trails where they led.
Rafe paused. Cuthin squirmed in his chair.
And one of them led to you. Money came into your department, money left, but not all to the fleet. You paid Despardeaux Materials more than their going rate for spare parts, for instance. 10% more. That's over $500,000 a year, and you probably split it with them, didn't you?
Rafe shook his head, waggled the point of the knife.
Naughty boy, Denny. Some men I've been around would carve their initials in your most intimate areas before they killed you, very slowly, or something like that.
You can't. You won't.
Oh, I don't know. You fellows down in enforcement have some nice quiet rooms, I understand.
Please.
Let's go on to your next mistake. Once I was named CEO, and you figured I was a stupid playboy, you thought you didn't have to follow orders. So when I told you specifically, to inform all those who had repaired Ansibles that they need not worry about our response, you chose to interpret that loosely.
I told my people to send messages.
How many places did you send ships?
I'm not sure.
Really? Are you in the habit of not knowing how you're distributing our resources?
No, but this was a special case, see? Some of those places, systems we've done business with for years, I could see your point, maybe. They're frustrated, and they're friendly. We can let them go, maybe. Though I still think that's the wrong approach. At least they ought to pay a fine, but illegals? Like that what's it you were calling about? That's ridiculous. We can't authorize every privateer or renegade merc company to go meddling with our property.
Rafe's finger wanted to twitch just that few millimeters. He forced it to hold still. He could feel it, the darkness rising to a primeval shape of fury that delighted in Cuthin's fear and would gladly delight in his blood, given the chance.
This is not every privateer. In point of fact, that is another mistake of yours. The Space Defense Force is new, yes, and small, yes. But it is a legitimate attempt to combine system resources to resist and eventually destroy the menace that attacked and captured Bissonnette system.
How?
Cuthin had moved past that first fear to defiance. Rafe read his physical signs as easily as if they were printed on his face. He was going to try something. Rafe hoped it would be enough to justify serious violence.
That is my business. On my father's orders, I did a lot of undercover work for ISC off-planet. I have sources you lack, and I know these people are reliable. Now, your deputy tells me that you have sent an entire sector's resources, 14 of our ships, to attack them. Your life, Denny, depends on what happens. Your physical life, I mean. Your life with this company, your job, your income, and whatever assets we can retrieve from what you embezzled from us is gone.
The shock on Cuthin's face was almost worth it. Rafe pressed a button on his desk, and Amel opened the door. Rafe was impressed. He not only opened the door, but also remembered which way Rafe's firearm was pointed and positioned himself out of the direct line of fire.
Emil, have security escort Cuth into a secure room. He is not to have any communications device available to him.
Yes, sir. I have security standing by. Do you have a preference?
Emil definitely had potential.
Yes, my personal bodyguards.
Rafe was still sifting through ISC security personnel records, and another two problems had been found only a few days before. Emil nodded, and two of Gary's finest came in. Rafe didn't mention their names in front of Cuthon.
This is Denny Cuthon. He has embezzled from this company, and he has acted counter to my direct orders in matters that will affect the company adversely. I want him held in a secure location in this building, and I don't want him communicating with anyone.
The man Rafe knew as Stan had drawn his own weapon.
Very well, sir. Limits, sir?
Keep him alive, for the time being. I suspect he may have concealed communications equipment on his person. Search him carefully.
Rafe lowered his weapon to the desk and slid the knife back up his sleeve, pressing the sheath clip when it was in place. Cuthon's gaze shifted from Rafe to the two guards.
You can't do this!
I think you will find I can. It would be advisable to go quietly with these gentlemen and cooperate with them.
If you please, sir, stand up, put your hands behind your head, and turn to face the windows.
Slowly, Cuthon did as he was told. Rafe, alert to the physical signs, saw the moment when he realized he'd lost everything. It wasn't as satisfying as if he'd beaten the man to a pulp himself, but it was a start. When Cuthon had been taken away, Rafe looked at the information Emil gave him on the ISC fleet. On paper, it was formidable. Even knowing what he knew about the poor maintenance, the lack of upgrades, the mediocre to poor training, he knew what Vanguard was like. He knew Kai had hired competent ex-mercs for her fighting crew. But he knew nothing about the other two ships in her fledgling fleet. He didn't count the courier vessels worth much. And even if the other ships were larger than Vanguard, and even if the courier ships had weapons and could use them, that was 6 against 14. He called Maliki again.
Here's what you're going to do. You're going to send a priority message to that Ansible with urgent instructions not to attack Space Defense Force ships.
But why?
You are relieved of duty. Stay where you are. I'm on my way.
He stood, unable to sit still.
Emil.
Yes, sir.
I'm going down to enforcement. Tell my people to meet me at the elevator on that floor.
If anyone tried to kill him between here and there, he relished the thought of what he could do.
Sir, do you want me to come along?
Rafe looked at the earnest young face, and for a moment his rage receded.
No, Emil. I need you here.
His guards gave him a brief reproachful look when he came out of the elevator, but said nothing, flanking him as he strode down the corridor to enforcement's warren of offices. He stopped the first person he saw.
Maliki.
The woman paled and backed up a step, but pointed. Maliki was standing in enforcement's communications suite. Rafe's implant gave him the face in its bland official image expression. Now the man looked tense, worried, glancing around uneasily. The four on-shift communications operators ignored him, concentrating on their consoles. When the door to the comm suite slid open, he looked up.
Sir, Chairman, I'm sorry, I...
You're relieved.
But, sir, I...
I said you're relieved. Sit there.
Rafe pointed. His guards took a step forward. Maliki almost fell into the indicated chair. Now the operators looked from Maliki to Rafe. One started to stand, then sank back to his seat.
Who's monitoring Ansible Boxtop Zip Figaro 112?
An operator raised her hand.
Me, sir.
Do you know who I am?
Yes, sir. The chairman, sir. Sarah Dunbarger.
Good. Then you know I have authority for this order. You will immediately transmit this message while I observe. To the ISC fleet, do not attack Space Defense Force vessels. Repeat, do not attack Space Defense Force vessels under any circumstances.
Rafe watched as the woman keyed in a series of identification and validation codes, and then the message he had ordered. He had seen a lot of ISC fleet orders in the past few days. He recognized many of the codes, and these looked legitimate. The woman glanced back over her shoulder.
Sir?
Yes?
Sir, you should know that they may not get those orders right away. Our system stats indicate that the jump point is many light hours from the Ansible, and there are no relays in that system. Considering down-jump turbulence and communication lags, they could engage those ships before they receive it.
Put it on broadcast.
She paled, with a quick glance at Maliki.
Sir, that will put our classified codes up for anyone to pick up, and if I broadcast without them, the fleet commander may decide the broadcast is a hoax.
Rafe wanted to think that was nonsense, but she was right. They should not broadcast the codes, and a prudent commander would reasonably assume that orders without the codes were faked.
Don't they try to pick up messages when they come in?
Yes, sir, but not if there's a hostile force or...
Another quick glance at Maliki, and then at him.
What they think is a hostile force.
So what you're telling me is that they may not get this message until it's too late?
She looked down at her hands, motionless now on the console.
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, sir, but really, once we send a fleet, it's pretty much out of our hands.
Very well. Thank you for the explanation.
It was not the operator's fault. When Rafe glanced at Maliki, the man cowered visibly in his chair, but he had no time to savor that. Kai was still in danger of being destroyed by his own people. He had to contact her directly. He had to warn her. His imagination raced. She would have known the first message. She would have known the second. She would think ISC had given up pursuit, maybe.
When 14 ships come through the jump point, will she even believe they're ISC? Will she think they're pirates? What will she do? Run, I hope. She won't run.
Sleep, as Hugh had said, was a duty for ship officers. Kai thought about activating her implant sleep function again. Her thoughts raced, and she felt as relaxed as a steel bar. Instead, she tried visualizing the color pattern she'd been taught as a child, struggling to find the harmony again. That didn't work either. She tried inventorying every ship component she could think of, but found herself concentrating too hard on that, worrying when she couldn't remember them all. Good news, then. That could put people to sleep. Stella seemed to be doing well, and Toby. She grinned, thinking of Toby and Rascal. Quincy had said Toby was ferociously bright. She remembered that he had helped install the defensive suite, and then had figured out that it was defective and how to fix it. Thinking of Toby brought up the memory of Rafe. And Rafe was definitely not a soporific thought. Her implant provided a crisper image of that Raquel face than memory could provide. Where is he now? Did he make it safely to his family? Did they reject him again? Their last conversation, his story about what made him what he was, that attempted abduction, his defense of himself and his sister, the consequences, ran through her mind word for word. What a thing to have in common with the man you, well, not love, are intrigued by, maybe. Feel more alive around, maybe.
Captain?
Kai fumbled around the head of the bed for the comm button. She'd been lying in bed for 3 solid hours, the chronometer told her, and she hadn't slept yet.
Yes, what is it?
Signal that Bassoon relayed to us. ISC sent another message and said to disregard the previous ones.
Did they say why?
No, just that.
That's odd. A relief, but odd. I wonder what's going on with them.
Suddenly, Kai felt sleepy. She must have been more concerned about ISC's possible intervention than she'd admitted to anyone, even herself.
Oh, thanks for letting me know. I'm going back to sleep.
Next shift, she woke feeling much less anxious about the days until the Mackenzie relief convoy arrived. If the pirates had been planning to move in after a successful attack, ambush the returning Mackenzie convoy, either they had changed their minds or... She didn't think they would attack now. Not that she planned to let down her guard. After breakfast, she visited Master Sergeant Pitt in the quarters assigned to the Mackenzie refugees.
I'm going to visit the wounded. I thought you'd like to come along.
Thank you, Captain.
How are your people doing? Anything I should know?
My best card player won some money off some of yours. If that's a problem.
No, unless they end up owning the ship.
I don't have much else for them to do, you see. If you have any lengthy chores, I'm sure there are things you don't want our people to see or touch, but we've cleaned the spaces assigned to us beyond our own standards. Not that they were dirty.
We have a gym, you know. There's plenty of room for them to exercise. I wouldn't want to expend our ammunition on the firing range, but you could use those facilities in rotation with my people.
That would be a help, Captain. They're good people, but just sitting around is not what they do best.
Kai paused and tapped into the ship's internal comm. Hugh, would you check the schedule for the gym and put the Mackenzie troops on the rotation? Master Sergeant, how many would you like to send at a time?
Half of them.
Two groups, Hugh.
Will do. Do you want me to contact you about this, or Master Sergeant Pitts?
Me. She's with me now. We're going to visit their wounded.
A few minutes, Captain. I'll have a list of what machines are available and all that. Firing range, too?
No, not that, but everything else.
In the sick bay, two of the wounded were now in bed, wired and tubed extensively. One was conscious, only lightly sedated. Kai let Pitt approach him while she spoke to the medical staff.
He's in the best shape. He needs some tank time, and I'll expect they'll want to revise some of the emergency repairs, but he'll be out of bed in another 24 hours. The other one had some implant damage, and he hasn't come back to full consciousness. The med box can sustain him, but we think he's just aware enough to start physical therapy. The others, the chest injuries in fast heal mode, he'll be in the box another 3 days, and of course he's kept sedated there. The one with the poked legs? We've been in contact with the Mackenzie medical team on Mater, and they want us to try to save as much as we can for direct tissue transfer after implanting limb buds. We're doing our best, but I'm concerned that one of the legs is developing anoxia. I'm going to tell Dr. Santino on Mater this morning that I think amputation is necessary. He may want to transfer back to their facility now that things have settled down. I presume that won't be a problem?
Only a matter of micro-jumping a couple of light hours and then easing into position near enough for Mater's shuttles to make the transfer quickly. But that wasn't the medical team's problem. The communications lag might be.
You know we've moved away from Mater. Will his condition be stable long enough for them to reply, or do we need to reposition the ship now?
I need an answer within an hour, or it may be too late to do anything but amputate.
We'll move the ship then.
Kai turned to Pitt.
We're going to move closer to Mater. Our surgeon needs to talk to your surgeons about some of your people. You can stay here if you like. I need to get to the bridge.
The precision micro-jump was no problem, with all the practice Kai had insisted on, and Kai reassured Mater the moment they reappeared nearby that the move was not in response to an enemy threat. When she explained the circumstances, one of Mater's surgeons and his medical team boarded a shuttle. As Kai had Vanguard ease toward Mater, the shuttle approached. Kai went down to the lock to meet them, wondering if there were any way a shuttle bay could be retrofitted to Vanguard's hull. This business of having to transfer personnel by tube made it obvious that Vanguard was just a converted cargo ship. The big cargo bay hatches would admit a shuttle, but that's where her missile batteries and missile storage were. What she needed was a purpose-built warship, designed from the start for war. What she really needed was a government or two to fund such a purchase.
We do want to evaluate him ourselves.
Of course.
Kai led the way to sickbay.
This is Dr. Moshala.
The doctors eyed each other a moment, then dove into medical jargon where Kai could not follow. She returned to the bridge and checked in with the other ships.
We haven't found any other stealth ships. We're fairly sure there aren't any, as I've had one of our people monitoring the channels the pirates used, and they've been silent.
Excellent. Though that doesn't prove no one's here, it does indicate that if someone is, whatever they know isn't going to the enemy.
Or that they knew the enemy was somewhere in FTL flight, on the way.
Keep monitoring just in case. You have a crew aboard that stealth ship you boarded, right?
Yes, I do. But if you could give us a relief crew... It's pretty unpleasant over there, they say. A bit of a hovel, actually. They cleaned it up as best they could, but it's not up to the standards of my ships.
Kai considered. Mackenzie were the ones with spare people, but she didn't want to give them possession of a ship she felt entitled to. But if she let Pitt's people do some of the work aboard Vanguard, she could send a prize crew to whatever its name was. She'd want to have Pettigrew's tech Latin along, too, to modify the Ansible and see what kinds of scan the pirates had been using.
We're about to do a medical transfer. When that's done, I'll come out and put my people aboard her with thanks for your efforts in the meantime.
That's fine, Captain Varta. We're honored to be associated with you, and we will keep the ship secure until you arrive.
Before she could contact Pettigrew to ask for the loan of Dozy Latin, a message came up from sickbay that the surgeons had decided to transfer two of the Mackenzie casualties back to Mater. Preparing them for transport took over an hour. Kai called Pettigrew and Argelos both, and each agreed to lend her one or two people. Argelos recommended his Slaughter Key military advisor for temporary captain.
Will he do what I tell him?
Kai had still not met the man who had been so negative about her in the beginning.
Oh, yes. He's admitted he misjudged you based on biased reports after you left the academy. He was there only one term before being yanked away to be an advisor to privateers. His name's Yamini.
The name meant nothing to Kai.
I'd still like to meet him, at least see his face on the screen.
Of course. Bistoff, come over here. Captain Varta wants to talk to you face to face.
The face on the screen was only vaguely familiar. Kai's father's implant had no catalog of Space Force Academy's faculty. She finally remembered that he had been a new tactics instructor her last term. No wonder he'd had a negative view of her.
I'm Major Yamini. You won't remember me. I didn't have you in class.
You taught junior tactics, didn't you? You were in the catalog.
Yes. I need to apologize for my attitude, Captain Varta. When Captain Argelos first told me you were trying to get an organization of privateers together, I thought you were as wild and irresponsible as they'd said when you were asked to resign.
My question now is whether you feel able to follow my orders if you are chosen to captain the stealth ship we found.
Absolutely, Captain Varta. I have no qualms at all now, and I do have skills you might find useful. That ship's computer may well contain information about the pirates' tactical capacity. I know that so far we've seen them use only fairly simple but effective attacks. But if they have something else in their arsenal, I might be able to find and analyze it.
Kai was glad not to have to give up any of her own bridge personnel, except a pilot.
Very well. When we've completed this medical transfer, Vanguard will jump to your position. We'll pick you up. Then we'll go get Latin, Pettigrew's talented communications tech, and the environmental tech he's offered me, and we'll take you all out to the ship. I expect to be making your transfer within the hour. I look forward to meeting you in person.
And I you, Captain Varta.
Kai went on to set up the transfer time with Captain Pettigrew. He offered instead to jump out to the stealth ship and transfer Latin directly.
I worry about clustering our ships like that. But if you want to do it now, that's a good idea. Just be sure to tell Ransom that you're coming in so he can alert his skeleton crew.
I'll do that. Then you want me back on station, I presume.
Yes. I know nothing seems to be happening, but that's when things do.
Even with precision micro jumps and the shipboard ansibles, it took the rest of that day to complete all the transfers and get everyone back on station. But Latin reported that the enemy prize had a complete suite of advanced scan, passive, active, long scan, and near scan.
Everything you could want. All wavelengths. I'd say they spent a fortune on it, except that it's clearly stolen from somewhere. There's a lot of physical damage to what were probably the serial numbers.
What about the ship herself?
They did something screwy to the beacon. Of course it's damned. All stealth tech does that. But I don't believe the current ideas it shows in the onboard is correct. There's a... It's kind of technical.
Well, never mind. But you think it's not the real ID?
No. But I can't tell if it's a stolen ship or one they programmed themselves. Most beacon readers won't pick up what I'm talking about, but you really should have it re-registered with a new chip somewhere.
I intend to. Can you tell if the rest of the AI is reliable?
I'm running checks on it now, Captain Varta. Captain, Yamini, he asked the same thing. He said he wanted to be sure the ship didn't do something weird on its own. Ooh, do you want me to check the stealth function?
Not at present. It's working now. Let's leave it alone. Just get that Ansible rigged to our frequencies so we can use it without the pirates finding out.
Yes, Captain.
Kai looked at the arrangement of the ships in the system plot again before she went back to her cabin. The stealth ship had moved, on her orders, and now was far from where the pirates had stationed it, and where they would presumably expect to find it if they invaded. No single attack, however lucky, could take out all her ships at once. Mater was still in danger, but Kai had persuaded Colonel Kalin to keep the shields up constantly. Once in her cabin, she fell asleep almost at once, only to wake in the middle of that shift to a terrible stench that almost made her gag.
Ugh! Light!
The bed lamp came on. She looked at the bed, half expecting to see a piece of spoiled fruit, but nothing. The inside of her head seemed to tingle and itch. The smell was so strong. Her implant popped up a message. Contact, yes or no.
Oh, implant. Implanted Ansible. Rafe. He said he wouldn't ever use it, but who else could it be?
A quick fumble through that folder in the implant, and she knew what she should do, but not before securing the ship.
Hugh, I need you to meet me in my office.
What's up, Captain?
I can't discuss it. I'll be there momentarily.
By the time Hugh arrived, she was dressed and had splashed cold water on her face. Hugh looked worried, unsurprisingly.
Are you sick, Captain? Has anyone done anything?
I'm not sick, but I will be unavailable for a time, and you needed to know that. I can't explain it, not now anyway. You will need to take over until I am back. I'll let you know. I'm sorry, that's all I can say, and I need to hurry.
Are you going to try to change implants or something? You really should have medical assistance.
No, it's not that. I can't say. I could have done this without telling you, but that wouldn't have been right.
All right, Captain, I won't press you further, but I get the strong feeling someone should know what's going on.
With that, he left. Kai secured the door, retrieved the power cables Rafe had given her, and followed the implant's directions. She did not like the idea of plugging into the ship's power supply. It took an effort of will to make herself close the connection. And he was there, as if he were standing beside her. The stench faded, replaced by a smell rather like wet leaves. As before, the urgency of his transmission felt like a shout inside her head.
Kai, are you there? Answer me.
Not so loud.
Sorry. You do have volume control.
Kai found that and brought the volume down to a manageable level.
I thought you said you would never use this thing.
Except in a dire emergency, which this may well be. Are you alone?
Yes. Hugh's in command. I told him...
About the Ansible?
No! That he was in charge and I was unavailable. He's puzzled, but coping. What is it?
A long and miserable story, and I'm afraid you're going to have to listen to quite a bit of it.
The story of your life?
Something like that, yes. I'll try to keep it as short as I can. When I got to Nexus, I found that my family was missing, and someone had a great interest in anyone who inquired about them. It took me an unfortunate length of time to figure out what had happened, find them, and arrange a hostage rescue.
Hostage?
Yes. My parents and my remaining sister had been abducted. Her husband had been killed. My delay in reaching them resulted in the loss of my sister's baby, killed by the abductors in front of her and my parents.
Kai could think of nothing to say.
My father was badly injured. He suffered neurological damage and is in rehab. He wanted me to take over as CEO of ISC. The board agreed, though some of them probably wish they hadn't. You need to know that the person who instigated the abduction of my family was Lou Parmina. I believe you knew him.
Lou? But he came to visit us. My father brought him home. He liked him.
So did my father, to his cost. I don't know whether he was involved in what happened to your family, but I know what he did to mine. Unfortunately, my father got it into his head that Parmina's friendship with your family made your family suspect. He's drawn a line from Osman Vada's possession of shipboard Ansibles, through your insistence on using them, your aunt's repair of the slaughter key Ansible.
She didn't!
Our sources say she authorized it. That's enough for him. And then there's Stella's pursuit, now successful, of patent rights to the improved version of shipboard Ansibles. He's convinced himself that Vadas were involved in Parmina's treachery. I'm hoping that as his recovery proceeds, he'll think more clearly and understand you had nothing to do with it. But right now, He is a problem, and the people in ISC who were his people are a problem. More immediately, there's an ISC fleet, 14 ships, headed for the system you're in, with intent to kill or capture you.
But we got a message saying that...
I know. I told them to send it, though my wording was different. The idiots in enforcement changed it. But they'd already dispatched the fleet on their own initiative, and I didn't find out about it until now. I've put an urgent message for them on the system, Ansible, but they may not stop for it before they start shooting. You've got to get out of there now. They're less than 16 hours out, and that's if enforcement told me the truth. Since I just arrested their head, they may not.
We can't leave, Rafe. We're guarding a Mackenzie ship full of wounded, and our supply ship. The pirates might come back.
Pirates might. ISC will. Kai, listen. 14 ships, including 2 full-size battle cruisers. I know you've just fought a battle. You can't have a full munitions load. You haven't got a chance.
I'm not leaving helpless ships behind for your goons to shoot up.
They're after you, not Mackenzie. I didn't realize. My father's not supposed to be interfering with my management, but he called someone in the department, told them about his suspicions, and they've picked you as the primary target. You and that space defense force you've put together. It's all a mistake. I can call them back once we're in contact, but they could blow you away before that.
Do you have their IDs?
Yes, but it won't do for you to blow them away either. That would prove that you're the enemy. You have to get out of there.
Send me their IDs. And I presume you know something about what armament they carry?
Yes, but I can't tell you that. Kai, if you'll just listen to me and get out.
Or you could listen to me when I say I'm not going anywhere.
Kai.
No, listen. The Mackenzie ship has had some damage, and it's stuffed with casualties. They're waiting for their relief convoy, which is due in... I forget how many days, but several. It's in transit. They can't contact it. The pirates not only attacked Mackenzie, we happened to arrive in the midst of that fight, but they had a stealthed observation ship in the system. We captured that, but not before it reported on the battle, and I'm not sure there's not another one. If I leave and there is another one, then the Mackenzie ship could be a prime target for another attack, and so might the relief convoy.
Protecting mercs is not your job.
Kai felt a wave of heat rush up to her head.
You do not define my job. The way I see it, my job is to protect those who need protection. And this ship does, and I'm doing it.
You are the most stubborn, idiotic...
Rafe, we're wasting time. I need the data on those ships, if only to evade them. Send me the data first, then we can try to figure some way to ensure that neither my people nor your people end up splattered across space.
Kai... All right.
A moment later, a data stream spit out in the implant. Kai was able to route it to the regular ship interface of her implant, and thence to the bridge.
Now, just a moment, Rafe. I'm going to try to talk on an external channel.
The pervasive smell of wet leaves changed to something peppery, whatever that meant, as she used the implant's interface to the ship intercom.
Yes, Captain? Are you available again? What's this data stream about?
I believe those are the ship IDs of 14 ISC ships that are believed to be on their way here. If the data are correct, someone may have the ship specs in their implant databases. Please check that.
On the way here to deal with us?
I believe that's the understanding. I have to go now. I'll be back with you shortly.
Kai disconnected the in-ship channel.
I wish you'd change your mind.
I can't. Now quit arguing and tell me everything you know about those ships. And if you need more time, why not contact Stella and relay through her so we can use the shipboard units? It's a lot more convenient.
She wasn't there. I did think of that, but she was en route from Cascadia Station down to Planetside to inspect manufacturing facilities. And the watchdog at her office wouldn't let me talk to Toby. I can't send you much more anyway. It's proprietary. It would be a breach of company security.
And talking to me on the Ansible I'm not supposed to know about, let alone have, isn't? Rafe, be reasonable. I'm not out to destroy ISC. I have no desire to blow up your ships. But the best way to ensure I don't is to tell me what their performance capacity is, so I can evade them until they've had time to get your messages via Ansible.
All right. All right, here.
Another data stream flowed into Kai's implant. Range, in-system maximum velocity, FTL engine type, weapons types and numbers...
Munitions types, range. She blinked. Surely a lot of those data had to be wrong. Rafe, some of these ships look a little outdated.
They are.
I don't see a minimum radius microjump listed.
It's not in their specs that I could find.
When is the last time this fleet went on live fire maneuvers?
I'd rather not say.
That wasn't surprising if her surmise was correct. Are their munitions... Have they been stored in the ships all this time?
All what time?
Rafe, those model RZM-200s haven't been manufactured any place I know of for over 30 years. And they're incompatible with current guidance systems. And, she did not add, the warheads deteriorated over time. Probably half those things wouldn't detonate at all, and the rest might detonate anywhere, anytime, once they were unlocked.
They still outnumber and outgun you. Numbers count.
It's true that enough ants can eat a camel, but a camel can walk away before they do. It was too early to feel what she felt, but she couldn't help it. 14 ships, yes, but not particularly dangerous ships.
You think you can evade them?
It's a possibility. Thank you for warning me, Rafe, but I think I need to disconnect now and get busy with my officers.
I still think that...
That I should leave, I know. I'll talk to the Mackenzie commander, but he's even more stubborn than I am, so don't expect that to happen.
Kai, please... take care.
You too. She pulled the plug to the ship's power. A last strange smell, and it was over. Her head felt odd, as if it were too big. But after a few moments, the sensation faded, and she was able to put away the cables, stand up, and move without any difficulty. As she'd expected, Colonel Kalin was unwilling to leave the system.
We're supposed to be in this system, and you assure me that ISC has no intention of attacking us.
That's what my informant said, but it's still dangerous.
Yes, but the one thing I'm sure is that my relief will be coming here, expecting to find us here. And if we're not here, there will be hell to pay.
It will not help either Mackenzie or ISC if they shoot holes in you by accident.
True. I will tell our captain to move us a considerable distance away from you.
That's a start, at least. And there's still the pirate problem. I'm not convinced they won't return. And the longer it is before they return, the more ships they're likely to bring with them. If it ends up as a three-cornered fight...
That's very unlikely. It would be an amazing coincidence.
True, but coincidences happen, and we can't afford to ignore them. I'm going to give you the data I have on those ISC ships.
You got this from that device on your ship, did you?
Kai reflected that an Ansible in her head was in fact on her ship and thus fulfilled the criteria. Yes.
I know we're going to want that technology. But in the meantime, what you're describing is very dangerous for you. You have no contractual obligation to us.
I'm not leaving. If worse comes to worst, if we're losing, maybe. But not now. Not before any shots are fired. A few hours later, a message came through the system Ansible for Mater. Colonel Kalin contacted Kai, though the light lag meant she got the message 6 hours after it came in, 2 hours after he received it. The Mackenzie convoy had picked up one of the messages he'd sent at an interim jump point and had changed their route. They would be in system days earlier than expected.
Early enough to be here when ISC arrives?
Kai wouldn't get an answer to that for 4 hours.
Possibly. They said they'd go to full power. By my calculations, they could be here a few hours before or within 6 hours after. Now, they know about the mine jump point entrance.
Kai had another conference with her captains.
We may have an interesting time. ISC is due to arrive in something under 10 hours. If they don't take care, they'll run into those mines. They may assume we placed them. Mackenzie's relief convoy might be here just before or just after them, or hours later. And the pirates, if there are pirates, may show up at any moment. Kalin told Mackenzie we were on their side, so we know Mackenzie ships won't shoot at us. But whether they'll shoot at ISC if ISC attacks us is another question. I didn't bother to ask Kalin, he wouldn't know. And light lag in communications is going to be a royal pain, with at least 3 and maybe 4 sets of ships.
You want us to hold our present alignment?
Yes. The pirates are the only ones who might risk coming in on some strange vector. The others will use the mapped jump point, and I expect both of them will come in warily, knowing the jump point might have been mined. Even if the pirates do something odd, we're in a good arrangement for them. Set your crew schedules so the crew you'd most want for battle are rested when we expect things to get interesting. Kai woke with the knot already in her stomach. Calculations or no calculations, 14 ships to 3 was higher odds than she had ever imagined facing. Ransom's Rangers would be effective gadflies, faster and more maneuverable than anything in that ISC fleet, but their armament was pitiful in comparison. She had only 2 beam weapons on her own ship. Any 2 of ISC's larger warships should be able to blow her entire fleet away. Except that ISC's ships should not be as effective as their paper statistics suggested. Should not was a slender thread to hang all those lives on.
Am I crazy to think it might work?
If she could slow down the attack long enough, if the captains of those ships downloaded the waiting message Rafe said he'd sent, no one need fire a shot. If was an even more slender thread.
Did Rafe tell the truth? Or is Rafe playing the role of ISC's chief officer, luring me into a situation we could not survive? Was his concern for me just an act?
They had been allies in the past, but he'd always insisted his primary loyalty was to ISC. She had no alternative, really, other than abandoning Mater. Though, with the Mackenzie Relief Force coming so soon, they wouldn't be uncovered long.
Captain, it's Captain Yamini.
What's the problem, Captain Yamini?
Latin picked up something on the shipboard on a channel the pirates use. She doesn't know the language, but the coordinates of this system were given. And she thinks she's got a direction on another stealth ship in the system. Here. She doesn't have any data on range, of course.
And we really don't have time to set up for triangulation and try to capture another signal. Call Captain Ransom and ask him to assign one of his ships to a quick search pattern along that vector, but carefully. That ship may be trying to lure one of us into range.
Yes, Captain.
And let's hope that ship doesn't have micro-jumping capability. I know we can detect the disturbances it'll leave that way, but a stealth ship hopping around is not my favorite thought.
We have contacts, not at the jump point.
Longscan showed 15 ships in 3-ship formations at that distance. They'd emerged from jump hours ago. The uncertainty smudges were elongated ovals, all immediately red-tagged as armed, weapons live. Kai's stomach knotted tighter.
That's not ISC, and it's not Mackenzie. They were coming into the jump point. Tell Mater, make sure they have the scan coordinates.
Though a message was probably on the way from them to her as well. Moment by moment, Scan refined the position from first acquisition, the ovals shortening behind and lengthening in front, narrowing as the data showed no deviation in course, no slackening of velocity.
They came in really fast. They know where they're going. They know they have no minefields to worry about.
Yep. And where they've been is safe for us. They can't lay mines at that velocity or reverse vector on in-system. They'd have to microjump.
Found it! It's another stealth observer, and we're taking it out. Furious, your turn. Ooh, good shot.
Oh, they've all left station. Give me another all-ships channel. I need to talk to Argelos and Pettigrew.
Is that ISC? They look a lot more formidable than you said.
No, that's not ISC. That's the pirates. If we're incredibly lucky, ISC will come barreling through the jump point and run headlong into them. But I don't think we'll be that lucky. Ransom's taking out the other stealth ship. I hope it's the last one. And we're all going to play hide the thimble until ISC or Mackenzie arrives. Or both. Once that stealth ship is gone, we'll start micro-jumping on those courses we discussed. Mater knows where to go, and our transport's already in hiding. If it gets too hot, we'll have to leave. Be sure your FTL engines are warmed up.
They're almost in range to use beam weapons. You know we can't jump with your precision.
Jump now, then. Your first vector. Just don't deviate from your plan. We don't want to land on top of you accidentally.
Shara's gift disappeared from the scan. She would reappear half a light hour away in a direction the fight should not propagate. 3 minutes later, the pile of garbage she'd jettisoned as a marker sparkled and flared as a beam hit it.
They're really annoyed. That was maximum distance. Shields would have held.
But flared.
Got him! All to smithereens he blew, to the great delight of all the crew.
And all that fancy stuff in poetry, too.
If they blow up our enemies, they can make up all the silly songs they want. They're definitely a case of the clock on its side.
Lee looked confused. Hugh didn't explain, but Kai grinned. Congratulations, Captain Ransom. Excellent shooting. Do you have the attackers on scan?
Yes, we do. I bet we could take one from behind. I believe we have the legs of them.
It may come to that, but right now, it would be most useful if you could slip in behind them and give us real-time data on their movements. Kai was watching scan. Mater, moving in the right direction, had still not micro-jumped. Kalin had said nothing about problems with the FTL engine. It disappeared from scan and reappeared almost at once, having jumped less than a light second. That would have been 2 hours ago, before Kai's crew had detected the pirates. They might be testing the FTL engine. That tiny hop could be evidence of precision or of a problem. She should have pushed harder to get Kalin's permission to install a shipboard Ansible on Mater, at no charge if necessary, so they could communicate in real time.
Beam discharge. Vector data.
Kai's navigator converted the vector data into a line on the screen. The pirates were still over 4 light hours away. The beam was aimed at where Vanguard would be on her present course.
That is the weirdest thing I ever saw. We know they've shot at us. We know where it's going and when it will get there. And unless it's more powerful than any beam I know about, our shields would hold against it if we let it hit us at that distance. It's child's play to evade it. They're much too far away. I wonder why they're taking these long shots.
They don't know we've got someone on their tail who can communicate with us in real time. They're trying to take us out before we think we're in range, hoping we don't have our shields up yet.
And we don't.
True. Without shields, it could at least knock out a lot of our scan and comm equipment on the outer hull. I wish Mater would get out of there. We can't protect her from 15 of them. That little hop worries me. Is she all right?
She may be playing stupid, trying to lure them in.
Broken wing act?
Something like that. Dangerous, though.
There's something on the Pirates Channel, Captain. I'm recording.
Let's hear it.
All ships in system, heave to and identify yourselves. This is the Blue Ridge Defense Alliance.
The face on the screen was of a clean-shaven, dark-haired man in a medium blue uniform with gold braid on the collar and epaulets dripping gold fringe. Behind him, they could see what looked like other officers in the same shade of blue, with similar collar markings but no epaulets. What the...
Who's the Blue Ridge Defense Alliance? I never heard of them.
Someone else with the same bright idea? It's not unheard of for even legitimate forces to fire a warning shot before hailing.
Who just happened to have shipboard ansibles with the pirates' channels? I don't think so. I think that's the pirates trying to act legitimate. Give me Captain Ransom. Teddy, can you strip their beacons yet? They're using the pirates' channels to claim they're the Blue Ridge Defense Alliance. I don't believe them. He should understand that without being told, but she wanted to make sure.
Of course, Captain Vasa. Just a moment. Got them. At least we've got the first three here.
The beacon data indicated that the first three were Blue Ridge Battersea, Blue Ridge Belinda, and Blue Ridge Backfin. Next came Blue Ridge Alba, Blue Ridge Ardent, and Blue Ridge Acera. All had supposedly been built by Blue Ridge Space Industries on Blue Ridge, where all were registered on dates that varied across 15 years. That's not much like a real space militia's way of naming ships. There's a heavy and two mediums in each triad. Everywhere else I know about, related names are for related hull designs. And why would Alba be registered 13 years before Acera when they're the exact same hull type? And look at the serial numbers. Squirt that over to the others. See if anyone has any ideas. And where is Blue Ridge? I never heard of it. Is that their real home base, or have they captured another system?
Pirate vessels Bassoon, Vanguard, Shara's Gift. Heave to, or you will be fired upon. Vessel Mater, heave to and prepare to explain your association with these pirates.
They sound like a legitimate space force. That might fool traitors or even a system defense force.
How long would it take pirates to get themselves some pretty uniforms and patches and so on? No longer than it took us, I'm betting. But Kai wondered if the ordinary trade ship captain would think of that. If she'd been hailed on normal channels back when she was a novice captain, she'd have believed the transmission legitimate. There's something about that fellow on the screen. I feel like I've seen him somewhere.
Blue Ridge isn't in the directory. If it's legitimate, it's outside this whole region.
Captain Vada!
Here!
One of those serial numbers was on a Bissonnette Defense Force heavy cruiser. A friend of mine commanded her, that's how I know. It wasn't built on Blue Ridge, whatever that is. It was built by Misawa Fabrication and Bissonnette System. I don't know about the others, but I bet that all those beacon IDs are faked. And they could be captured Bissonnette warships.
Aha! So it's our old friends Gamus Turek and company. You have the weapon specs for Bissonnette ships of those classes, Dan?
Yes, but the short answer is we're in trouble. Kev's ship was built only 5 years ago. The tronics are all up to date as of the time I left. We can't possibly fight them and survive, let alone win.
That's most unfortunate. And we have to assume they know how to use what they've got. Though that premature shot suggests incomplete familiarity. I wonder if that talking head is Gamus Turek after a haircut. Martin, pull Turek's image out of our files and compare, please. If we've got a chance to wipe out Turek...
ISC should show up on our scans any moment if your source was right about the down jump time.
Contacts, jump point entry, low relative velocity, 5, 8, 12, 14. High-powered beacons. Yep, that's the ISC contingent. It's tightening up. They didn't come in fast, and this shows them working their way through the minefield.
I think our dance card is about to get full. I wonder what they'll say to each other. With any luck, one set will turn tail and run, preferably the pirates. And I hope the ISC ships pick up their messages from the Ansible before they do anything else.
We have light-speed data coming in from the Blue Ridge Pirates. Same message.
They aren't sure we have the Ansibles. They don't know if we all have them. I wonder what ISC ships will make of it.
The ISC doesn't heed to for anyone. Sorry, Captain.
It's not that message I'm worried about, but the one where they label us pirates. ISC doesn't know that the Blue Ridge Defense Alliance is actually pirates.